And I think the key message I took away from what you were both saying is that this type of marketplace is intended to attract high conviction participants. And they're willing to base their choice on either a gut feel or, in this case, market intelligence gathered through, I'll say, for lack of a better term, creative polling ideas.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join me, Ryan Stubbe, Director of Bitcoin Mining, alongside our team of experts, Jason Ward, the head of FCAT Blockchain and Crypto, Parth Gargava, head of Digital Asset Startups in Fidelity Labs, and Jack Newrider, associate at F Prime Capital. Every week, we roll up our sleeves and delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit the subscribe button for your weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are that of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently. Hey guys, good morning.
Hey Ryan, happy Monday.
Good morning, guys.
Happy Monday. I'm glad to see you're both here because you never really know, when Bitcoin rips the way it's ripped in the last week, who's gonna go for an early retirement in this group of people. So glad to see you guys have decided to stick around at least for the next week.
Well, you know, Ryan, they say if you do what you love, it's never work. So
there you go.
We get to
there
sit here go. And that's, talk about this today and all the other happenings that have been going on in the past week. So
that's the right mentality. Yeah, yeah. I know it's been such a quiet news week. I don't know what we're going to talk about today.
I will tell you, I had to look at my calendar, make sure that we're in 2024, not 2017, when I saw the momentous activity that's been occurring. So again, keeping in mind that volatility swings both ways, and that, many people are very interested in seeing how things move. But at the same point in time, we have to be cautious and remember that a lot of this is speculative volatility. And, either way, it is definitely something that I'm not sure that we would have predicted last week, nor should we. But, I'm choosing the word predicted on purpose, because I think today we're going to talk a little bit more about prediction markets, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think, so we're recording this on Veterans Day in the United States. So the U.S. presidential election has happened and the results are in. And of course, Donald Trump is claiming victory, has claimed victory over Kamala Harris in the presidential election. And of course, the GOP is slated to take control of the House as well, right? So really pretty momentous week from a political standpoint in the United States. And I think it has a lot of people kind of speculating, to your point, Jason, but also asking questions around what the implications are going to be for the crypto industry, right? Because there is a perception, right, that based on, some campaign promises and things that have been, kind of slated, right, for a Trump administration, that have a lot of people kind of optimistic around, what the next several years for the industry could look like from a regulation standpoint, from an adoption standpoint, right? So I think, a lot of this, to your point, is TBD as to how it all shakes out. So I think, there is one thing that we do have some certainty around, right? And I think if we take kind of a look back over the last several weeks, and beyond, right, the role of prediction markets, right, in this election and in other kind of large issues globally is something that has gotten a lot of attention. Obviously, Polymarket has been in the headlines a lot and has kind of brought this mainstream. Obviously, they're not the first, the first company to offer these types of services. But I think, we really just wanted to take the opportunity, I think, today just to talk, of course, about the outcome of the election and what that might mean. But I think really through a lens of prediction markets, and how that has kind of played out, right? So, I think we can really just jump right in.
Well, Ryan, one thing which I want to quickly talk about is that even before we hit the prediction markets, it's actually so interesting that they were close to close to half of the money which was collected as part of donations this cycle came from crypto-focused groups, right? That right. itself is massive. And I don't think that's something which we could have predicted 4 years ago in the last election cycle.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. I mean, the industry really showed up, right, for this election, right? From a funding standpoint, from a, you know, education and advocacy standpoint. I mean, this was one of the bigger issues in this election, right? So yep. I think, you know, and again, we should talk a little bit about the dynamics of Polymarket, right? Because I think, you know, many people thought going into it that Polymarket predictions and kind of, you know, how that was trending leading into the election might have been skewed based on the fact that you had, you know, some very bullish, you know, pro crypto, pro Trump people kind of influencing those markets, right? But it turns out that some of those predictions were pretty heavily aligned with the actual outcome of the election, right? Which I think is really fascinating, you know, in general.
And I think that's certainly true, but I think it's also one of those things where people were concerned that it might end up being the tail wagging the dog, where people would look to a prediction market mm-hmm. and maybe think that was going to influence their how other people might vote. But, you know, putting that aside for a moment, I will say it was fascinating to hear people across different media outlets talking and referencing crypto prediction markets.
Oh, I love
Polymarket. I mean, I heard it on CNBC. I heard it on several other podcasts. And, you know, I just think about it and was like, wow, this is not only has the digital asset industry become a mainstream discussion topic for policy and become a key issue that was very, I don't want to say central because it wasn't central, but it was openly discussed leading up to this election. And now after the election, I would say there's a lot of assumption that's leading people to predict again that things may be more positive, although we don't really know until policies are scripted. You know, the regulators are the regulators. They're here to ensure that investors are protected. And frankly, I think this is a lot of still speculation, albeit based on indications from prior to the election that things would be more positive.
The market, I mean, is very news driven, right? News cycle driven. Okay. We've talked about this before, right? It's extremely reactive to these types of events, right? And it's possible that, you know, we've to be fair, we've seen two things happen, right? In certain instances, we've seen a continued, you know, upward momentum, right? And in some cases, we've seen, you know, a pullback followed by, you know, upward momentum, right? Or even in some cases, downward momentum, right? Yeah. So I think that's the uncertainty is, you know, until we have, you know, to your point, Jason, more concrete, you know, more concrete legislation, more concrete kind of points of view from the incoming administration. I think it's mainly the industry and you know, investors kind of looking at, you know, what's already been said, which is fairly substantive, right? Yeah. But there's not a ton of detail on how this will shake out.
Well, I think one part which we can't ignore is that it's been the most, you know, fun and exciting moment for prediction markets. Prediction markets have been out for a while, even before crypto. And what I like to do is maybe we could take a few steps back and, you know, almost go over a 101 on what prediction markets are.
I think that would be great. Yeah. Yeah.
And so maybe if I start out with Polymarket. So Polymarket is the, you know, biggest prediction market. And they did over $3.3 billion in volume just on the presidential market. So that should tell you something, right? In the last 30 days. And what Polymarket does is it's essentially a market based on the theory of where money meets conviction. Right, so I'll go into how it works, but essentially prediction markets are a way for the internet to find that collective wisdom and then provide insights into future events. And so, you know, I have a bunch of stories around Polymarket leading up to the election, but essentially, you know, the interesting part was how prediction markets are different from traditional polls or pollsters. And you know, maybe we can go deeper into that. But love to get your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I do think that we should talk a little bit about that. But, you know, you want to talk maybe the history here is interesting, right? Because I think, to your point, this has been around for a while. There's been other providers. Polymarket, I think, is a relatively new company. What were the use cases, prior to, right? Because the election has really made it popular. And to Jason's earlier point, like when you're hearing about it on CNBC, it's become more mainstream, right? I would say in general. But yeah, Parth, I know you said you kind of did some early research on this as well, and there were other kind of companies or providers in this space that cater to this market.
So Polymarket is fairly new. It came out in 2020, and it got a lot of traction around sports betting in the beginning, but then you had a lot of people voting on economic indicators, right? So when you think about close to COVID, right after COVID, is the interest rate going to go up or down? How much is it going to go up or down by? And we've had prediction markets in the crypto space as well. The most notable one being Augur, which is one of the OG prediction markets. And the difference between Augur and Polymarket is that Augur is more decentralized. It's not led by a foundation, not led by a team. And Polymarket fully operates on Polygon, which is obviously way faster compared to Augur being on Ethereum. And so there are, a few differences between, other different kinds of prediction markets. But what I like to think about, and prediction markets were there in 2020 as well. And I remember how volatile they were at that point of time during the U.S. presidential election. But I feel like now is the time when they actually got way more mainstream compared to 4 years ago.
And Parth, can I just ask another question? As you're talking about the contrasts and similarities between Augur and Polymarket, I think you said in a private discussion beforehand that U.S. people are not eligible for Polymarket. Is that right?
That's right. So I think Polymarket has been facing some regulatory scrutiny. I believe they were fined for $1.4 million by the CFTC. And so, you can use the application of Polymarket, but you can only view results and you can view trades and bets, but you can't directly place bets if you're in the U.S. And that's the biggest difference.
But there are a couple of platforms available to U.S. investors now, right? Since in the immediate days leading up to the election, I think, Robinhood, right, very notably created a market, specific to the election. Mm-hmm. And there was, what's the other provider?
It's Kalshi. So Kalshi became the number one application on the App Store before the election.
Yeah. So that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, exactly. But I do want to call out a few stories. So one of the most interesting part for me was right after the election closed, Polymarket was pricing Trump at 62% to win, right, versus 38% for Kamala. And, every other pollster or every other modeler which had poll results, most of them said that it's going to be a really tight race. And so there was this underlying delta, which was really interesting between prediction markets and traditional pollsters. And, when you dig deeper, you realize that the biggest difference between modelers that use polls is that they're, what they have as their input is your traditional polls. Whereas for Polymarket, by definition, Polymarket uses whatever people think is going to be correct, is going to be the right outcome. And they're willing to put their money behind it. And
well, so that's just it, right? I think there the conviction, right, around people putting their money behind their point of view,
right,
or at least a different type of indicator than what we see with traditional polling.
Yeah, and so one of the top stories which I enjoyed was by this French whale, this former bank trader who goes by the name of Theo. Now this guy bet on Trump across different bets on Polymarket, right? Like who wins the race, who gets the popular vote, who gets 6 out of 7 swing states. And this guy was all in on Trump. And he won $50 million and put a lot of his net worth on it. Now, I saw one of his interviews, which I thought was really interesting and it's worth sharing. But he said that the pollsters were polling like they've been polling for years, right? It's essentially an online survey or calling people on the phone. And the response rate for a lot of these traditional polls is around 5%, which is super low. And so you already have some kind of bias, but you kind of cut that out by doing corrections using stats. But most importantly, this guy Theo, he spoke about the shy voter effect, where a lot of people may have falsified who they voted for in social settings or, just to be polite. And so you aren't just because you don't want to be the odd one out. Now, what this guy, Theo, what he did was he just didn't put a bunch of money on one candidate on Polymarket. But what he did was he commissioned a pollster and used something called as the neighbor effect. So instead of asking, hey, who did you vote for, like every other poll does, the question was, who do you think your neighbor voted for? Right? Which I think is the interesting part. And so he claimed that he kind of had a good sample size by asking this question. And that's where he saw this huge delta, a huge opportunity to go all in on one candidate on Polymarket. So that's kind of what gave him the confidence to bet his whole net worth on one side.
So Parth, it's a great story. And I feel like it's great context because they were getting some type of information. But I would be remiss if we didn't put in the public service announcement at some point here saying, we do not advocate for people taking such risks. And, you know, again, think about only putting at risk what you are willing to lose. But the point,
well, and if you're in the U.S., likely not that, at all, right?
Like, I think exactly. You know, so we're not advocating for this type of activity, but we're trying to educate around how it happened.
How it works.
And what I really love about what you just said is this individual, whom I'm not familiar with, decided to express the rationale behind the positions they chose to, I'll say, stake and put their money against. Because for a lot of people, I think that shy voter effect you referenced is real. Mm-hmm. We heard lots of mainstream media talking about that. And ultimately, when you get into this type of prediction market, I look back and say, wow, polls were wrong leading into Brexit. They were wrong leading into the 2016 election. There's a high degree of uncertainty, even though there's a lot of effort that go into polling. And I think the key message I took away from what you were both saying is that this type of marketplace is intended to attract high conviction participants. Yep. And they're willing to base their choice on either a gut feel, or in this case with this person, Theo, supposedly some market intelligence gathered through, I'll say, for lack of a better term, creative polling ideas.
Well, yeah. Jason, what's interesting here is that you had, you know, mainstream media talk about, so they ran reports about how people betting for Trump on Polymarket are smaller in numbers, but are placing bigger bets, right? But then, you know, they forgot about how cool it is that it's all on the blockchain, right? It's on a public ledger. And so all I had to do was, you know, we pull up a Dune dashboard and the data didn't, you know, back up their claims. And so I believe I do have some of the numbers. But there were close to 100,000 buyers on Polymarket for Trump yes, Harris no. And there were close to 80,000 buyers for Harris yes and Trump no. And the average bet size for both sides was around $4,500. So the data wasn't as skewed as people thought it would be. And the interesting part was Polymarket became slightly more mainstream when they got you know, Nate Silver, who's a stats guy known for contrarian predictions as an advisor on Polymarket. Polymarket also got Vitalik and Peter Thiel's founder fund on their cap table. So these kind of things give some, you know, credibility to some prediction markets.
Well, I think it was the Robinhood CEO that said prediction markets really aren't going anywhere, right? Yep. I think that obviously in the U.S., there's this kind of pending regulatory question, which we may get an answer to, you know, over the next 4 years in the new administration, right? But I think that in general, the industry sentiment around this concept more broadly is bullish.
Yeah, and maybe we should quickly go into how prediction markets work.
I think that's worthwhile. And there's a couple of questions that came to mind as we made the comparison to kind of traditional polling, right? And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, or started to at least, you know, these are blockchain-based kind of applications, a very high level of transparency. However, we maybe don't have as much information around the individuals making these bets in terms of the demographics, right? So, of course, gender, where they're located, and some of the other things that traditional polling, you know, commonly does capture, right? Mm-hmm. So I think maybe we could talk a little bit about that. That would be good too.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first things, so it's actually a really simple process, right? So the first step on placing any sort of building any sort of market is market curation. Now, any user can propose a new market, and that market is then reviewed by a bunch of platform moderators to ensure relevance, clear definitions, and just making sure that it has a binary outcome, a yes or a no. The second step is really simple. So participants buy shares in favor of or against a particular outcome. So it's as simple as saying a yes or a no. Now, the most interesting part here is actually what happens after you're done. So it's the consensus and the resolution, where Polymarket uses something called as optimistic oracles using the UMA protocol to verify event outcomes. So what they do is they query information, look for off-chain sources to provide information to settle bets, and it could come out from news outlets, from public records, and then, you know, that is followed by the payouts. So participants holding shares, if you guess the correct outcome, you essentially receive payouts proportional to your holdings. Now, one interesting story, which I think takes us a few years ago, which I think is really fascinating, focused on resolution, is that prediction markets use natural language to allow people to wager about future events, right? So now if I'm a market creator, I have to use, you know, English words to essentially place a market bet. Now, language can sometimes be imprecise, and it can have some kind of edge cases where participants might disagree on the outcome. And something similar happened in 2022, where there was a dispute on market prediction. And the question was, who was named as Time's 2022 Person of the Year? That turned out to be an ambiguity, and I'll explain why. So the question was, quote unquote, will Volodymyr Zelensky be the 2022 Time Person of the Year? Right. Mm-hmm. And so for the Zelensky market, what they did was the resolution for them was to go to Time's Person of the Year website, you know, which goes to their homepage, and then they obviously saw Zelensky's photo. Now, the answer was slightly complicated, a little more complicated, I would say, because in this case, in the Zelensky market, the criteria emphasized that the market would only settle, so the bets get settled, only if Zelensky is named as the exclusive person of the year. And when they went deeper on the Time magazine, they realized that, you know, Time named the 2022 Person of the Year as Volodymyr Zelensky and the Spirit of Ukraine.
Yeah.
Yep. So, right. And so then it got really confusing because, well, whether it's a yes or a no, did Zelensky win the Time Person of the Year? And that's actually where you saw ambiguity.
I wonder if you would face a similar challenge, like using the outcome of the election as an example. Obviously, this isn't the case, right? Vice President Harris has conceded and you know, President Biden has, you know, committed to peaceful transition of power to President Trump or incoming President Trump. But if the outcome of the election was disputed, what would that mean, right? For because I think you could find yourself in a very similar kind of situation as you know, this other example, which I think is a very good example of what can go wrong, right, with these, you know, less structured, less regulated markets.
Yeah. And that's exactly where it goes into when you build the market in the first case, you have to be extremely clear on what the definition of an outcome is, which is what makes it really interesting. But, you know, you do have like a bunch of benefits of using prediction markets on a blockchain, right? So if we spoke about Robinhood, Kalshi, and a bunch of others, but, you know, the most important is you get decentralization where it's not operated by a central authority, a central control. So it reduces the risk of manipulation. Again, not saying that, you know, the ones which have a company-backed prediction market are manipulating, but essentially you get those extra guarantees. The other part is, like I said, you know, how there was a narrative in mainstream media on how there was just a small section of people placing large bets, but well, if you're on the blockchain, it's really transparent. It's a transparent ledger. I can see, you know, using smart contracts, I can see how the execution of trades happened, what's the distribution of rewards. All of that is pretty transparent. And then the last is, I would say, security, right? Because it's not, you're not relying on one company's security, but you're relying on cryptographic security mechanisms to protect against fraud and hacking, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, no, super, super fascinating. And I think, so just to maybe transition the discussion a little bit, right? I think, you know, TBD on, you know, the role of prediction markets and our broader markets in the US, but clearly technologically and just from a efficacy standpoint in this particular election, it did kind of shake out as prediction markets said it would, which is really fascinating. So I think this is something that we're going to hear a lot more about. I think you'll probably have a lot more competition in this space would be my guess, right? You know, again, Polymarkets has kind of dominated, but we have other companies that have, you know, moved into the space and you know, have kind of capitalized on the momentum around the election. Anything else, you know, just to summarize it, in closing thoughts around, you know, prediction markets specifically, because then I know, Jason, we wanted to talk a little bit about futures, which is, you know, there's some similar, obviously very different, but some similar market dynamics or behavioral, you know, dynamics in play there. Any other thoughts?
My closing comment would be, I think prediction markets are really exciting, and I really hope that a lot of these bigger players don't mess it up. Like I saw this new product came out of Polymarket called PolyLend in 2024, which is a lending protocol which allows users to borrow USDC against their conditional token positions, right? So now you're going in slightly more in the degen, you know, space, and I think that's, hopefully they don't mess it up. I think it's an exciting thing, and I'm hoping that it stays around, especially on the decentralized side, so.
Yeah, for sure. So Jason, you want to talk a bit about futures, you know, open interest? I think this has been another area, you know, that, you know, looking at the data and reading between the lines that kind of indicated that, we would maybe get a candidate, that was a little bit more, you know, quote unquote friendly, you know, and there's a lot of kind of ambiguity around what that means towards crypto, in some of the futures data. So I think you want to just maybe summarize a little bit about what we've seen there.
I'd love to. And, you know, just before I do that, I would say, Ryan, you and I had the interesting experience of actually witnessing the outcome of a U.S. election from another country, where you and I were both over in London for activities last week. But I think what's interesting is perspective, right? So using that as a transition, looking at the markets for options for Bitcoin, both onshore and offshore, we've seen tremendous volatility. And based on the earlier discussion, I was thinking to myself, there are now three things that are guaranteed: death, taxes, and volatility. We see that the volatility in the Bitcoin market in particular over the past, call it 6 days, week, 7 days, the price as of this discussion is right around 84,500. And apparently it has hit a new all-time high today of just 50 cents shy of 85,000. But it's important to understand that the election was 6 days ago and Bitcoin was trading around 69,000 at that point. So we're roughly up $15,000 per coin over the past 6 days. What was interesting is I started preparing by looking at what was the open interest for ADK as a price, which was surpassed yesterday. And it had been, you know, a little over 1.6 billion, but there's some reporting now that for the offshore exchange Deribit, the open interest for Bitcoin's price above 90,000 has risen to over $2.8 billion of open interest. So that's directionally bullish. There was also reporting from Amber Data that the ADK strike price actually had the most negative gamma. And what that basically means is that's the most net short interest. So there are market makers or participants who may have shorted Bitcoin and then need to acquire Bitcoin in order to cover their shorts. So that could be providing some additional upside pressure in the near term. But when you think about it, people use derivatives for a few different ways. They use them as a speculative investment. They also use them to hedge. So as we think about onshore activity, the CME is one example of an onshore Bitcoin futures and options exchange, and you look at the duration. So people may have expiration dates that exceed the current week, month, quarter. So you look out and say they're using these instruments as ways to either participate in, you know, I'll say a positive return, whether that's because they're net short or net long, and whatever the strike price delta versus the market price at that point in time is how they settle up. Or others are hedging. And, you know, participants like miners, and Ryan, you're very familiar with the side, miners may use derivatives to hedge their long-term risk because they need to make sure they have the ability to pay for expenses in fiat currency as opposed to maybe using Bitcoin currency. But although I'm talking about Bitcoin in particular, I think, you know, Ethereum has also seen a pretty significant rise over the past week. So again, these are short-term reactions to major market events. We don't know how they will go long-term. But one thing that people do is look at what are the future strike prices and what's the open interest for those longer-dated maturities. And I think that's something that we'll continue to watch. So definitely not the same type of market as a poly market, but just an example of how the same type of information flow is affecting derivative pricing for participants who may be in the TradFi space looking for exposure to crypto.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great summary. And, you know, to me, it feels like the common theme between the two, as you mentioned, they're very different concepts and markets in terms of how they function. But it's really about looking at data that we've never really had or never, you know, in the futures we've had it. But, you know, in the poly market case, you know, we really haven't had as much of it. And looking at kind of that data and taking it, using it as an input, right, to basically look at the outcome of, you know, of course, elections, but I think there are other applications where, you know, you may start to see, you know, a more or a heavier emphasis put on this new data, right? I think, and, again, in the prediction markets case.
Yeah, I think the key here isn't focus on number go up. And that's certainly what we don't want to do. We are fond of describing that, you know, winters are great for building. Well, here we are after a longer extended winter. There's been lots of building. And even while the number may be going up today and could be going down tomorrow or even later today, there are still people that are building relentlessly in thinking about things like Bitcoin L2s or looking at ways to increase scalability on Ethereum or other chains. So I think what makes me impressed is the fact that they will keep focus on utility and accessibility and making sure that we are discussing a technology as opposed to an asset in terms of how it can positively affect the human experience.
Jason, there's no more joy in building with the number going up.
You're building.
We embrace crypto winters, but there's nothing like the number go up phase.
Well, I think there is. I think there's more anxiety when the number goes up. And that's why I was telling you guys when I looked at the calendar, is it 2017 or is it 2024? And I can literally remember when Bitcoin was spiking to near $20,000, and it was right around the time when CME actually began trading futures, I believe, cash settled futures at that. So here we are 7 years later, and you know, people continue to build.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. I mean, and it's timely, right? We hosted the OpNext conference at our office in Boston this weekend. We hosted, you know, a couple hundred development focused individuals looking at Bitcoin scalability, and really great discussions and a lot of enthusiasm around, you know, to your point, Jason, bringing additional capabilities and utility to Bitcoin, right, through different scalability solutions. So I think that's really awesome. And again, there's a lot of people who are really grinding along to you know, move this space forward, you know, some of us included on this call, right? So I think that's definitely worth calling out. But anyway, I think we need to strap in. It's going to be a very, very busy couple of weeks and months ahead from a news perspective. But we really look forward to bringing that to you and helping you digest some of that in the weeks and months ahead. So really appreciate the discussion today, guys. Thanks so much. Thanks everyone for joining, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a good rest of your week.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution would or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2024 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.